So I would like to thank the organizer first to the opportunity of this talk. I haven't been smart enough to change the title of my talk, so of course I'm not going to talk about all the astrophysics and cosmology that you can do with LISA. I will concentrate mainly on two topics, so one in astrophysics and one in cosmology. In astrophysics, I will show you how we can measure peculiar accelerations of binaries or compact binaries with LISA, and especially I will go through applications to binary black holes and galactic binaries. And then in cosmology, I will concentrate on standard sirens and measurements, cosmological measurements that you can do with LISA. So let's start with the first topic. What is this? So LISA will see many binaries early in the spiral, let's say, for which you can actually see the waveform for the whole period of observation of LISA. If this binary happens to be near another object, for example, a black hole binary near a supermassive black hole or an intermediate mass black holes, or for example, for a lower mass system like white dwarf binaries, if you have a planet or another star orbiting around them, then these binaries will be perturbed by the presence of this third object. In particular, what happens is that the binary will itself be on a Keplerian orbit around the common center of mass of the triple system. So what happens is that at the observer, the frequency that you see of your gravitational wave signal is actually Doppler shifted with respect to the frequency emitted by the binary. What this means is that when you do parameter estimations over your waveform detected by LISA, this frequency here will imprint a signal in the phase of your waveform, from which you can basically recover some of the parameters of the third object. For example, you can recover the line of sight velocity, which depends on the masses and the inclination of the system. You can get the period, the initial phase, or the centricity, and so on, of the third object. This method is basically equivalent to radial velocity with the EM techniques, only it uses gravitational waves instead of electromagnetic waves. So what you can do with this? There are many applications with LISA. So whenever you see a binary that is basically emitting for the whole period of observation of LISA, you can expect to use this method. And with LISA, we have binary black holes, so stellar mass black holes that are observed late in the spiral. These are the same black holes that LIGO is observing, but LISA will also, of course, see only the spiral. And if, for example, these black holes are in globular clusters, you can expect them to interact with a third object, a third black hole, or an intermediate mass black hole. If they are in an AGN disk or really close to the galactic center, you can expect them to interact with the supermassive black holes in the galactic centers. But this can also be applied to white dwarf binaries in the Milky Way. LISA will see a lot of them, tens of thousands of white dwarf binaries in the Milky Way. So if there is a third object around these white dwarf binaries, you might detect the presence of this object with these techniques. So let's see, for example, starting from binary black holes. I stole this nice picture from a paper of Case and Emanuele. What you can see here is that depending on the mass of the perturbing objects and the separation of it, you can either observe or not observe the presence of the object. And with observing, I mean, you can measure at least the period and the line of sight velocity of the object. So you can see that these can go down to really close separation for a few hundreds or a few tens of solar masses of object with these masses. And this can go up to like 10 to the 8, 10 to the 9 solar masses. You can expect to see objects up to 10 to the 3, 10 to the 4 AU. But the point is that even this picture is realized only for binary that merge on a period comparable to the period of observation of LISA. And this is actually the exact, let's say the ideal situation to observe the peculiar velocity, because basically you are observing the binary for the longer period possible, so the whole period of observation, but the binary is basically chirping during this period. So it starts, if it merges like after 5 years and you're observing for 5 years, then you expect that the chirping that the binary will have, it breaks the degeneracy in the waveform, so you can actually observe the effect of the acceleration. And you can see this, for example, in this plot where you have the initial frequency of observation and the redshift chirp mass. The black line here is like the time to collision. It's for a period of observation of 5 years. You can see that the binary is here is the purple region is the region where you can observe this effect. And you can see that these are basically clustered around the line where for binary is merging exactly in 5 years. And the same stuff happens if you, for example, consider 10 years. If you go to 10 years, then you actually see that the region expands towards the 10 years merging time. And of course, we also computed the effect for binaries that you can actually observe also with Hertz-based detectors, so this kind of multiband or jointed space and Hertz detections. In this case, of course, because you're observing also with the interferometers on the Hertz, you can break some of the degeneracy, and you can observe more parameter space and more binaries. So what we are doing now is to understand for how many of these binaries, or black hole binaries, you can observe this effect. And this is interesting because, of course, as I told you before, if you manage to observe this effect for a sufficient amount of binaries, you can infer some of the information on the environment of the binary, for example, on the density of objects around or on the location of the binaries, if, for example, it happens to be in an AGN disk. What we are doing now is to take a realistic population of binary black holes and see how many you can observe of them. The preliminary results from this paper are that for 4 years of observation, you actually cannot see much. So you basically won't observe this effect for any of the binaries that you will detect. However, if you already take 10 years, then you can see that you can already see basically 20% of the binaries that will have a measurable peculiar acceleration. And this is important even for joint detection. If you go to joint detection, this percentage goes up to 40-45%. So the point of this picture is that for binaries that are really merging, let's say that have a time to collisions close to the period of observation of LISA, you have to take into account this effect. And also mainly for multiband detection, you have to take into account. And even if you don't measure the effect, this peculiar acceleration gives a strong bias on some of the parameters of the waveform. So you can actually see that for acceleration of like 10 to the minus 7, 10 to the minus 6 meter per second square, which are typical acceleration that you can find in globular cluster or in AGN disk, then you see that even for 4 years of LISA, like 40 or even more than 75% of the event are biased. Biased means that they have at least one parameter for which the bias induced by the peculiar acceleration is larger than the error with which you measure this parameter. So the bottom line is that you have to take into account this effect, especially for multiband observations. What you can do with the white dwarf binaries is quite different, as interesting. In this paper here, we looked at the minimum mass that you can detect of the observer, and we found that you can observe basically giant exoplanets around the white dwarf binaries down to Jupiter masses around, let's say, 1 AU from the binary. And this is quite interesting, and there's a lot of implications, especially because you have a lot of synergy with the current exoplanetary observation and future exoplanetary observation. The implications mainly are that you can detect, let's say, stellar mass object up to 100 years with the periods of up to 100 years. And you can also detect exoplanets, as I say, down to Jupiter masses with periods up to the mission lifetime. So let's say 4 years or 10 years, depending on how long LISA will fly. But the important thing is that these exoplanets and these stars also will be detected everywhere in the galaxy, because LISA will see these white dwarf binaries everywhere in the galaxy. It means that you have the possibility to detect, for example, exoplanets of Jupiter masses everywhere in the Milky Way. And this is really interesting because it overcomes the bias of EM searches for exoplanets, which are limited to the solar neighborhood, and let's say to 3 or let's say up to 8 kiloparsec if you want. And so this will basically provide, I'll say LISA will provide a new method to discover exoplanets everywhere in the galaxy. So let's now pass to the second part of my talk. So I will talk now about cosmology of LISA and what we can do with standard sirens. So I was lucky enough that we had a lot of talks about standard siren yesterday, so I skip all the introductory part. So I assume that you know by now what is a standard siren and what you can do with them. The question that I want to put is like, is now how, let's say, which sources can you use with LISA as standard siren? And of course, you can use all the binaries that you see at cosmological distances. So you can use massive black hole binaries, you can use stellar mass black holes, and EMRIs if you are able to see them. Among these sources, massive black hole binaries are expected to emit a counterpart, as we have seen in the previous talks. So we might have the possibility to see the counterpart. So we have the possibility to just identify the hosting galaxies and have a unique identification of redshift measurement. The other two sources, however, are not expected to produce any counterpart, at least in the more mainstream models. So for these sources, we will have to use the so-called statistical methods, or let's say cross-correlating with the galaxy catalogs if you want to do some cosmology. The interesting things about all these sources, as Alberto was mentioning on Monday, is that you can actually see them at really different redshift ranges. So you will see stellar mass black holes between redshift 0.01 and 0.1, let's say. EMRIs will be mainly detected between redshift 0.1 and 1. And massive black hole binaries, of course, will be detected at redshift 7 or 8 or even larger. The interesting point about this is that if you make a cosmological analysis out of this, LISA, which is actually a mission designed to detect gravitational waves, as a cosmological probe will be able to basically map the expansion of the universe from really low redshift to really high redshift, which is something really impressive for a cosmological probe. And the interesting part about this is that if you put together the measurements of all these different sources, it will allow you to break the degeneracies in the parameter space of the cosmological model. So for example, in this case, Lambda CDM, which is the most simple model that we can use, as we are seeing right now, we are doing the analysis right now. What you see here is that sources at low redshift, for example, stellar mass black holes, are completely insensitive of omega m, but that they can measure H naught like the sources that LIGO is seeing right now. However, sources at high redshift, like massive black holes, can break this degeneracy because they will be able to observe both omega m and H naught. So once you basically put together sources at high redshift and at low redshift, you will break the degeneracy, for example, in this parameter space omega m H naught, and they really have hopefully a good measurement of both parameters. We still have to, I mean, this is still a work in progress, so I cannot give you a number of what we can achieve. However, as you can see from this graph, the massive black holes are supposed to be the most constraining ones, so I go into the detail of the analysis that we have done with them. In this paper 3 years ago, within the LISA collaboration, we tried to understand how we can use massive black holes for cosmology. So what we did, we simulated a population of massive black holes using three different astrophysical models and merging three semi-analytical simulations. We computed how many mergers we get from the simulation, and we computed the gravitational wave signal for each of these mergers. Then we selected the one with an SNR bigger than 8 and with a sky localization better than 10 degrees squared. After this, we simulated the electromagnetic counterpart, and this we took a really simple model. So we We took a model from this paper here of Parenzuela and collaborators, where you have basically a quasar-like luminosity flare in the optical at the merger, and then you have a magnetic field-induced flare and jet in the radio. With the information from our simulation on gas and stellar mass around the merger, we were able to compute the magnitude of the electromagnetic emissions. And once we had that, we took the specifics of future telescopes. We used the LSST, and then we used the SKA and the ELT to understand if we actually can see this counterpart out to really high redshift. And the most effective strategy that we found to get the counterpart is to detect the radio emission with SKA and then to follow up with ELT to get the redshift from the hosting galaxy. So the results of the analysis are this one. We were able to detect, this is probably the most optimistic scenario that we had, right, roughly 3 to 5 standard sirens per year with counterparts. So these are black holes for which you can detect the counterparts. And you can see from the redshift distribution that the majority of the sources will be detected around redshift 2 or 3, but we will tails up to redshift 7 or 8. And this is good news if you want to try to constrain the expansion of the universe at really high redshift. It's bad news if you want to do like dark energy analysis and so on, because as you can see, for example, this mock catalog that we made, you don't have many points at low redshift. So when dark energy start to dominate, you are not able to actually get some constraints from these models. However, as I said, this is really good for testing beyond lambda CDM models because you have a lot of data points at high redshift. And this is actually what we did within the LISA collaborations. So as Tessa was mentioning yesterday, if you have a modification of your propagation equation of a gravitational wave, you have that the luminosity distance as inferred from gravitational waves is different from the one inferred from electromagnetic wave. And this is related to this parameter that enters the gravitational wave propagation equation. And what we did, we used a simple, really simple parameterization which we took from this paper here, where basically the gravitational wave luminosity distance is parameterized with respect to the electromagnetic luminosity distance with this formula here, with these two parameters, mainly by this parameter xi naught. And this is a good approximation because in a lot of models and really standard, modified gravity models, you can, for example, scalar tensor theories or Densky and non-local gravity and so on, this modification is quite useful and effective to have a, fit to the to the exact solution that you get in these theories. So it's a parameterization which can be quite useful, and what we did is to understand what you can do with that. And as you can see from these results, which is a recent paper that we finished inside the cosmology working group of LISA, as I was mentioning, you won't have really good constraints on the standard dark energy. So in here you see in gray the constraints from LISA, and in red, but you actually cannot see it, in blue the constraints from all the combined EM probe that we have nowadays. So you can see that LISA won't be competitive with electromagnetic probe. However, if you look at modified gravity, then the electromagnetic probe will be completely insensitive to this parameter xi naught, for example, in the parameterization that we use. While LISA, this is just the combined constraint, LISA will be basically have a constraint which cross the parameter space in this picture, for example. And LISA will be able basically to pinpoint down these parameters, so this deviation from standard general relativity down to the few percent level, let's say. So finally, as I was mentioning and was going through the methods that we use to compute the massive black holes standard sirens catalogs. As you can see, we didn't use all the possible, for example, all the possible electromagnetic counterpart, all the possible, let's say, features that you can use to pinpoint down the electromagnetic redshift. So these analyses can actually be improved, and there are a lot of ways that we have to improve in the future. For example, we must use up-to-date simulation of massive black hole binaries. We have to improve the parameter estimation because, of course, massive black holes might have, like, for example, a higher mass ratio, so the luminosity distance can be even, the constraints on the luminosity distance can be even better. We have to consider all possible EM signatures, so not only radio and optical, but as you will see before, also X-rays, also periodic modulation, and so on. And we have to consider other future EM facilities, and especially we have to understand how to get the redshift of this object. So, for example, how many transients we will see in the sky localization region of LISA? Can we also identify the hosting galaxy? And what methods can we use to identify the redshift? And especially, we also have to understand all the possible systematic that you can have, especially lensing and possible delensing for these sources. As I didn't mention, lensing is, of course, the major contribution in the error of the luminosity distance at high redshift. So I just leave you with the summary. I went through one argument of astrophysics and one argument of cosmology for LISA. In the first case, we can measure the peculiar acceleration of long-lasting binaries in LISA if we have a close or a massive enough object. And this can be applied to black hole, stellar mass black holes in LISA or white dwarf binaries if you want to detect, for example, exoplanets or stellar mass objects around them. And finally, I talked about cosmology, and especially about standard sirens with LISA. We have three possible sources so far that we can use cosmology. We have massive black holes, for which you can detect an electromagnetic counterpart. We have EMRIs and stellar origin black holes, which means stellar mass black holes, for which we are not detecting a counterpart, so we will have to use the statistical method. This means that LISA will be able to probe the cosmic expansion from really low redshift up to really high redshift, almost redshift 10. And this will be really useful to test alternative cosmological models and modify gravity. Thank you.
Any questions?
Hey, what is the time scale of this radio transient emission at the merger of massive black holes?
I think you can have a radio, there are more experts in this room to respond to questions, but I think you can have a radio emission even after like weeks or months after the merger. So the time scale is quite long. If you don't have, it's not like LIGO sources, I think that you have to point the telescope immediately after the merger.
So very nice talk. And I just wanted to make a comment on the supermassive black hole case. Okay, they're at higher redshifts, but they still should constrain dark energy quite well, would be my expectation, especially if by the time this is happening, let's just say that LIGO is measured H-naught to high accuracy, then you can use that as a primer.
Yeah.
And then you should have a lot of
what I meant,
in the right place to constrain dark energy. There.
What I meant is that if you don't use any prior, you can do really much. But if you then add the other data low redshift, then you really you can contribute.
Combined with CMB at high redshift, I mean,
it's
perfect.
Yeah.
Because the question I thought Dan was going to ask is, do you include lensing of scattering in these models so there is a dispersion?
Okay. So you just add a, proportional to the scanner for lensing?
Yeah, it was like a redshift, a fit on the redshift error.
So I had one other question, which is in the white dwarfs, I guess I was a little worried, you can only detect orbital periods of a few years, and so Jupiter is at those periods that would survive, not get dragged in during the red giant evolution, the common envelope, and be far enough to be detected. It seems a little...
No, we already know of planets that survived the common envelope evolution, and they're still there. So That might not be.
Well, their planet's very close in, but
yeah, they unfortunately are not so close. Yeah, the population that LISA will see is not probed right now, so we have no observation on that. But we know that planets can survive the common envelope evolution because we already have some detection, not so close to the binary, but quite wider. And we also have some theoretical indication that there might be second generation planets formed by the residual of the gas after the common envelope evolution.
Well, the biggest point is just that it's not quite standard planets, right? I mean,
No, it's not.
Yeah. Other questions?
Thanks. So following on the Jupiters, will you be able to tell what that population looks like, or?
It depends how many detections we will have. If we have no detection, of course, no. If we have at least a few tens of detection, you might be able to say something. But what we are doing right now is to use simulated populations of white dwarfs and to try to use rates inferred from like pollution of white dwarfs to understand roughly how many exoplanets we will see with LISA. They won't be, even if we will see tens of thousands of white dwarfs, this won't be exceed like few hundreds of exoplanets, I think. So the statistics won't be super big.
Questions? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.
Yep.